KIUT 89.5 FM, bringing you the sound of your city for 30 years.
Oh, what do you know? It's us. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor. Remind you, SoundCloud, Taylor-Report, and Facebook, / The Taylor Report. We're The on Facebook, and we're a hyphen on SoundCloud. And with me is Phil Conlon, and there's a big issues today. We ought to talk about some of this news, I guess. The North Korea news, we were hoping to get Steve Gowans. Listeners are familiar with him. And I would urge you to go to the Gowans site, because it's called gowans.wordpress.com, I think. I know, WordPress, how do you do that?
Let me look it up. We'll do it later.
Yeah. At any rate, the North Korea thing is it the the U.S. treats and our foreign minister, as you know, we all love our foreign minister, Chrystia Freeland. They have decided that they can dictate to sovereign countries how they're to behave when those sovereign countries are exercising their rights. The United States occupies, they are the commander in chief. U.S. military is commander in chief, as told to us by Steve Gowans. I reference him, look him up. And they have command of the South Korean Army and Navy and Air Force. And they are in the waters off Korea with heavy advanced weaponry. And they have been since the end of World War II. They've never gone home. And they insist that they can behave as they wish. North Korea is a sovereign country, and it was engaged in a war with the United States under General MacArthur and Harry Truman, who were the most brightest little lights in American history, too. And that war does – there is no peace agreement. There is only an armistice. I guess we call it a ceasefire. And that is a very dangerous situation. Other countries who are not tailing the U.S. as the world's great highest expression of freedom and democracy, such as Russia and China, and I realize I've said Russia, which immediately means that phones will ring in NATO headquarters and the Communications Excellence Committee will look into this. But they also are a sovereign country, lo and behold, and they say they don't appreciate this kind of diktat by a superpower towards another country, that this is a simple matter of trying to get a peace agreement. And then you could denuclearize. But you see, the superpower with nuclear weapons would also have to bend. It would have to cease to make threats and cease to test its weaponry and to behave as though a war situation exists. These remarks were made by the representative, Mr. Lavrov. I don't know if you saw that, Phil, but Lavrov has he points out that and I don't understand why people don't just agree with this point. You have a president of the United States who speaks in an abusive way. He sends a minister, a representative to the United Nations. She speaks in an abusive way. They use language which is outside the parameters of appropriate diplomacy and international law. They have threatened the country of North Korea with obliteration. And this is not the way to resolve the problem. There are countries in the region, all of whom, including South Korea, would like to see a negotiated peace deal. And then this could go away. But instead, and again I'm echoing something Lavrov said, the U.S. was asked, since there's a tense situation, North Korea has developed a nuclear weapon. They've also, it is apparent, even though everybody laughed and said they couldn't do it, they've developed a long-range missile capacity. And therefore, now that they've got this capacity, it would behoove everybody to be careful because a lot of terrible things can happen fast. You want an easy reference, look up World War I. Just look it up and see how quickly it happened. So according to Lavrov, the Russians asked the United States, could you kind of take a break on your military activity in the region? And he said, we were told they were going to do that. He said they even sent a signal to Russia. They said, we're going to take like a 3 month, six month hiatus in our testing, our drills in the region. And therefore, this would be an opportunity. That would be a window for people to kind of talk and see if we can eliminate the tension. He said, now, after telling us that, they have sent these very special weapons, particularly the stealth planes, into South Korea to practice flights, which one assumes will be along the lines of previous Pentagon activity. I don't know if the President of the United States actually has any say in this. When you watch the presidents come and go, what the Pentagon does and what the presidents say they're going to do seems to be kind of left hand, right hand, or tail and foot, or whatever it is, hoof and tail. And so instead of postponing, they have decided to go through these exercises. These exercises are of a type which creates tension because it is not clear when they're practicing and when they might be busy, might be doing something, which puts the onus on the party that is watching, who thinks it might be under attack potentially, of deciding what to do about that. So this is not something to play with, but of course, Donald and his friends and Obama and his friends and Carter and their friends have not learned this lesson. I mentioned the name Carter. I want to remind everyone, if you didn't know, Carter was almost impeached for saying that the United States should reduce the number of troops. When he was president, he said, I think I'll reduce the number of troops in South Korea. And everyone went crazy. They said, you can't possibly be serious. And so he said, no, I'm not serious. We'll keep the troops there. So that was Jimmy Carter. As we know, Carter has a conscience. He has no power, and he never admits that that his time in office was wasted. If he believed in removing the troops, he should have removed them. But apparently, as president, he didn't have the power to do it. Anyway, that we're calling attention to this matter today. I had one other point about Canada's role. Chrystia Freeland, our foreign minister, said on the weekend the testing of a missile by North Korea cannot be tolerated. So when she said that, my only question was, did she check with her president when she said it? Because whether it's tolerable is obviously not under her say-so. For all the talk about Canada, it is completely under the thumb and in the NATO complex, and it has a small room down the hall, and nobody can find it. If Trump decides that he wants to go to come to blows with a country armed with a nuclear weapon, there won't be a phone call to the prime minister. It'll happen, and the prime minister will find out. And when Ms. Freeland says it's not tolerable, she misspeaks. Korea is within its rights to test weapons, particularly under threat by a power that has more weapons than it does and much more sophisticated. It has a right to do that. You haven't violated any international law. President of the United States invokes all kinds of power over his own citizens, depriving them of rights and liberties and all sorts of things. And he also kidnaps people out of other countries. He also kills them using drones. All of that is not tolerable, actually. But when they do rationalize that activity, that kind of conduct, they say we have a right to defend ourselves. Well, they're not the only country in the world. Every country can say it has those rights, and that is not deniable. The question is whether it is the right of nations' self-determination, right to representation in international forums such as the United Nations. That's the only test, and North Korea has passed all those tests. So saying that we agree with Trump is only adding to the danger, and it is kind of a joke that the foreign minister speaks to North Korea as though she could back up anything she's saying. She cannot. Even if Canada were to suddenly become very military and powerful and all that, she wouldn't dare cross the Koreans without the Americans saying so. They went to a lot of trouble to put this team together. So you want to play on a team, you do as number one says do. This is the Taylor Report. That was subject with North Korea. We're going to take a break. A while ago, we played this song apropos refugees. And there's a second one, and it has to do with the U.S. under both Obama and Trump and Bush and all the others, particularly their treatment of Mexican Americans who are in prisons all over the place in the U.S. because they've been picked up by the immigration, where their rights are taken away from them. And so there's a song by Woody Guthrie about what happened to a family. This is a true story, by the way. It actually did happen. And it's one of the names for the song is Deportees.
That's all I can remember.
That's all he could remember. By the way, I know Woody Guthrie wrote it. I swear I don't recognize his voice because this guy is more of what you call a singer. But anyhow,
it's the right words.
It's a great song, yeah, and very apropos, particularly since the U.S. administration under – it's. I always like to point out, I don't care whether they were Democrats or Republicans, they treat immigrants, particularly so-called illegals, which is a lie, the Mexican-Americans in a very oppressive way. They separate families and do all kinds of things. And of course, they have put them in private prisons because – why have a prison unless you can make money off it? It's an ugly situation. And for a state to call itself a world leader and dictate to other states is that song should remind us they have no right to do so. Phil, you have the
– Yeah, this is the website for Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. Gowans is spelled G-O-W-A-N-S. Gowans.wordpress.com. And Stephen Gowans keeps on top of the Korean situation.
Yeah, he's got a new book coming out about Korea, and it will be what they call a must-read because this issue is not well understood. Certainly, if you were to rely on the NATO scribblers of the New York Times and Sunday Telegraph and the Globe Mail and all that, you would only hear that it's an outlaw country and all that. It's no such thing. And the Korean War, people need to study it, how it happened and the bloody consequences. There were many Canadians killed, by the way, there and who did a lot of killing following the superpower that had decided to pivot to Asia. This idea of pivoting to Asia is kind of an old idea since there once was a place called Shanghai that was run entirely by Europeans, and there were signs in the windows that said no dogs or Chinese allowed. And so that was within a century ago. And the Chinese seem to remember that, bless their hearts, and good for them. Again, I'll remind you, this is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. This news from Yemen is a very important news, and I think it caught, like the Zimbabwe story, it caught a lot of people sort of off guard. I noticed some of the aficionados that one goes to their sites had all – they heard that Abdullah Saleh, the former president of Yemen, had said that he was going to switch sides. He did it in his usual way. He said, let's turn a page. I reach out to the brothers in Saudi Arabia who are bombing his country, bombing his country. And he said, then we'll make peace. And so I noticed that, and again, I refer to these people who always want to be the first kid on the block to say something. They said, well, that the war is over because Saleh has switched sides, and therefore the city of Sana'a will go over to him, and the Houthi element will be driven out, and that was that. And I'll tell you who said this. Moon of Alabama. Many people will go to Moon of Alabama. Well, in a matter of hours, they had to change their story. And they're scratching their heads about why. Well, it's very simple. Why the people of Yemen love their country and hate the Saudis. And, okay, he's a leader. But if you're a traitor and a leader, you are in for a short trip. And he decided he was too smart for everybody. That's my opinion. He decided that he was going to, after saying the right thing, the country had a right to defend itself against Saudi Arabia and its big partners, the United Kingdom, of which we're a part, and the United States are providing the weaponry and helping a blockade that is starving and killing the people of Yemen. And the people of Yemen actually have proven to be quite resilient. And one thing I would agree with some Moon of Alabama about, and somebody should have pointed this out a long time ago. Actually, no, I think it was Charmin Narwani who pointed this out, that the Yemeni people and the Houthi are not down-market folks. They're not ignorant. They're not peasants. They're not the lower orders that will take orders. They actually are people who assert themselves and are tired of being stood upon by their betters. And he belongs to one of those groups that consider themselves the betters because they have certain leadership circles who prosper at all times, whether the people suffer or not. And so when the Saudis decided that they would punish the poorest country in the Middle East, Yemen, for having the temerity to choose their own leaders, particularly people called the Houthi, who they looked down upon, they bit off more than they could chew. So this is going to be a long-term, unpleasant matter for the Saudis. And I would warn them, they might actually lose. They might actually be minus a royal family in Saudi Arabia. I know that we're reading about the New York Times sent its ace correspondent, Mr. Friedman. What's his name?
Friedman.
Friedman.
Oh,
Friedman
Lord.
Went and someone said and tongued the king to death. Just loved him and talked about what a great reformer he is. He's actually someone who seems to be trying to do a bunch of emergency things much too fast, and which he thinks a phone call is good enough. But see, this bulldog has got him by the ankle now, and he thinks that you can just keep arresting people, changing sides, double-crossing allies, and Washington will always look after you. He better take a look. There's a bunch of bodies all across the Middle East that used to be America's allies, who they betrayed. Frankly, they betrayed them because they had other interests. So this new monarch of Saudi Arabia, he has a unique way of collecting taxes. We might borrow an idea from him. Arrest all the billionaires and tell them you'll let them out when they give you as much money as you want. I would say that's an idea. Let's run that one by Chrystia Freeland and her friend. Just arrest the billionaires, hold them in a nice hotel, which is what he did. He put them in a hotel and
five-star
hotel, yeah. And said, you can go home when you give me a billion, 2 billion, three, whatever the number I make up, you will pay me. And he didn't bother with laws and lawyers and stuff like that. He just said, I want the money, and you can go home. And so some of them are giving him the money. I think maybe, that, in that sense, the prince might be onto something. He said, just take them, invite them all to a meeting. Say, well, we're going to have a big meeting. You guys are big shots, so we're going to put you in the best hotel. Anyhow, that's the only good idea he's had is that one. But actually, my guess is some of them are going to come out and take over the kingdom. If he blows this thing in Yemen, they're going to have to scramble to put together something. And that might be the end of this famous family that runs the place. By the way, speaking of famous family, I want to move to another matter here. Myanmar. The Pope went to Myanmar. And why did he go? The Toronto Star and the Globe Mail, the New York Times, are all disappointed that they wanted him. He had been assigned to use one word. And if he had to go there and use this word, otherwise he was betraying us, which is, when I say us, I mean NATO's, the real people. He didn't do that. He went because, there, you know, there's a new government under Suu Kyi. She is called, I think, the councilwoman. She has a very special title. And because she has not changed Myanmar to suit the capitals of Washington, Paris, London, whatever, she's gone from number one citizen to zero. Just, you know, like overnight, like she's the coach of the New York Giants or something, football team. Just like big stuff, nothing. Maybe Peyton Manning would be another. Anyhow, but the Pope was playing along with everybody else. He said, I got this invitation. They're introducing reforms. We don't have a mutual recognition, Vatican, Myanmar, so we're going to establish them. So they established relations. So then he was invited. He accepted the invitation. He went there, and all the New York Times and the Globe and Mail and everybody said, he's got to say Rohingya. It's very important that he say Rohingya. Well, actually, he went as a guest. He was invited, and he behaved like a guest and not like he was the host. The host country said, please come. We think you could help us in establishing peace and better relations in our country. Now, nobody reported what he actually said. This is the first time on here in the Taylor Report. Listen to this. I'm recommending you go to the Vatican Radio. Vatican Radio. Check it out. After CIUT. It's my favorite station. Go to Vatican Radio, and you can get his actual words, which the Globe Star, New York Times, did not share with us. Instead, they all got angry because he didn't go and talk the way we would have gone and talked, I suppose. But, of course, we weren't invited, by the way, because the relations between these states is not good enough. He went as the leader of the Catholic faith. I don't know if the Star realizes this. He is a Catholic, and he represents Vatican interest. And so he spoke to his own followers, Catholics. He spoke to the bishops. He gathered all the leading elements of the Catholic Church, and he called upon them to try to bring peace in Myanmar. And he told them the way to do it. And he said it has to be an all-inclusive, mutually respectful peace, one that provides security for everyone. This is the way religious leaders talk. They don't have their, talking points from NATO. They actually have their own way of doing things. Then he met, guess who? The Buddhist leaders of Myanmar. He met them. He talked to them, and he said the same thing to them that he said to his own faith group. He said, we need a dialogue. We need peace. We need a ceasefire. And this is another important element of the Pope's visit. He said, I support the Panglong Conference. If you read our papers, you wouldn't even know there was a Panglong Conference. This is an attempt by the leader, Suu Kyi, the leader of the country, and the government that she represents, to end the fighting in that country. There are eight armies fighting the government of Myanmar, representing eight distinct ethnic groups. Now, if you want the Pope to go there and call out their names and said, I like this one, I don't like that one, well, what are you trying to do? Contribute to the civil war? Is that what you really would like to do? The Panglong Conference has been trying to achieve a ceasefire. That's very laudable. And another detail, very important one on language and an important personage, Kofi Annan, former Secretary General of the United Nations, was asked by the government of Myanmar to write a report and recommendation to how to end the violence and end the refugee status of those in the Rakhine State, specifically Rakhine State, which has a lot of problems. And he did that. And he delivered his report this year, August this year. He says in the report he was asked by the government, all the elements of the government, not just one person, to not use words that will inflame an already tense situation. That those words were Rohingya, and the other one was Bengali. Now, I read in my local papers that the government calls the refugees Bengali. That is not true. That is not true. Those words are contributing to the inflammation. If you want to see the wound more inflamed, go ahead and use those words. But in order to have meetings with each other, they try to reduce this language. And the Pope respected that. He's in a country that says, we don't want to inflame. We want to calm the situation. But actually, the Prime Minister of Canada, the editorial writers for sure, all the NATO gang, they want to see the situation inflamed. Bottom line, why is that? Because the government of Myanmar has turned out not to be as loyal to the West as they had hoped, that it still is doing business with China, and there is talk that there will be better improved relations. By the way, the Chinese have been this might be a little secret, but the Chinese have participated in a meeting between the Bangladeshi government and the government of Myanmar to return the refugees to Myanmar. There's an agreement. That isn't even talked about here, nor is Kofi Annan's report talked about here. So, and nor is the content of the Pope's remarks talked about here. So I would say stop disrespecting the Pope. But why don't the Globe help us all out by reprinting exactly what he said, because he was helping to bring peace to the country. Of course, if you were interested in war and blocking China, why don't you just go ahead and say so? So this has been the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I want to thank Carol and Phil and Brendan. Braden. We got there. Braden, thank you very, very much. We're working on this. Braden, thank you.